the What You've Been Watching podcast. I am, as always, your host, the marvelous Mike Dudley, joined as always by my youngest brother, cohort, and co-host,
MD3 Marcus Dudley, checking in on the YOU. What is going on out there in podcast land? We are broadcasting live from the Whatcha Been Watching studios right here in the south side of Tallahassee. Amidst the rubble, amidst the debris, we stand strong. Big shout out to those that are in need of help right now.
Then came the storm.
Then
all was lost. Now we are but a desolate wasteland. Survivors doing as they must to live to see another day.
Well done. What's that from?
I don't know.
That was off the top of the head?
Yeah.
Oh, well played. Well played.
I mean, it was kind of Mad Max.
Yeah, it did have a little Mad Max-y feel. But yeah, we're broadcasting live from the south side of Tallahassee amidst the rubbles of the storms. You can find us at Whatcha Been Watching Podcast at gmail.com. Shout out to Kesta for the lovely intro music.
Always
bright. And it was not bright here recently over the weekend, but it is now. So we're going to make it through. And
the sun will come out tomorrow.
Good rendition, sir.
Yeah.
And also for our lovely interlude music, reach out to Mr. A1 at a1reality.music@gmail.com. I promise you he's got all the flavors. The man is a quadruple threat. He sings, he raps, he writes songs, and what else does he do?
I heard he was a pretty proficient alligator wrestler.
I was going to say that exact same thing. So there's four right there. Plus, he makes beats. So there's five. But yeah, reach out to him if you got anything. If you just fancy yourself a musician and need something to rap or sing over, hit him up. If you got intro music or outro music or interlude music like we use here on the podcast, he's got the flavors for you. Reach out. My brother, where else can they find us?
They can find us on Instagram, finally, at What You've Been Watching. Or you can reach out to us at facebook.com/Dudley Bros Podcast.
House cleaning mode complete. We can check those boxes.
That's right.
Man, how you been though, dude?
Like I said, post-storm, thankfully we didn't lose power. So that's good. I mean, it kind of browned out for a minute, you know, rolled in and out, but never really officially went completely off. So that's good. Dude, there are places in town that got obliterated.
Like 100%.
Apparently a tornado touchdown. And we're going to talk a little local business right now, but so
just 2 weeks old at least by the time you hear this.
Just excuse our local references, you know. Hey, now you know if you're living in New York what it's like when you're a New York comic and you're like, don't you know when you hate your when you're on 58th Street and you're trying to get to 75th and blah, shut the fuck up. Anywho,
yep.
Railroad Square apparently had a tornado drop down in the middle of it. And I don't know if you got a chance to see some of those pictures, man, but it's sad. Like, those businesses, a lot of them are not coming back. Like, I know it's the city's obligation to, like, pick up the debris and get the trees cleared and stuff like that, get the power restored, but a lot of the damage that those shops took, that's on them and their insurance, and they are probably going away.
I would, honestly, and this breaks my heart to hear, unless there is a real push from the community to keep something like that here in town, I would not be surprised if that was the end of that part of our arts district in terms of just gentrification, its proximity to campus and things of that nature. And
you know, as soon as that place goes away, they're putting up real high-rise apartments.
Yeah. It's a shame. I hope not, truly. I know that there's a parking crisis and a housing crisis for our students. Not, I would call it a crisis, but there's an issue for our students. So, I mean, I guess it would solve one thing, but man, at the expense of the one artsy place we have, it's not too keen on that, to be honest with you. So, our thoughts go out to those that are suffering from that, you know, Cap City Video Lounge, all the other places, Cosmic Cat, one of the local establishments that's been in town. I used to bootleg
the arcade bar. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I used to bootleg Dragon Ball Z tape from Cosmic Cat when I was a child. So shout out to that place for helping me in my childhood. They've been around for a long time. But it sucks when something like that goes out of business, man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So,
but anyways, yeah. But I'm glad you're okay, Pops.
How'd you do?
I mean, our power goes out if a squirrel farts. So I'm surprised that it did not go out for very long. It was out for a while. The internet took longer to come back than the power. So, but we walked away pretty much unscathed, knock on wood. And
right on.
Last year around this time, we had a tornado rip our pool all apart, our back fence apart, everything apart, and it's like trees falling everywhere. I had to spend several thousand dollars cutting trees down. It's terrible. So dodge this one.
I don't want to be an adult anymore. This sucks.
It sucks, dude. It sucks.
Stay but, here forever.
But yeah, so other than that though, man, just been chipping away at it. And oh, I was asking you how you're doing, but it, now it's about me, so whatever. Yeah, other than that, just working at things, man, trying to climb up the corporate ladder as best I can to reach some level that maybe I can be fulfilled one day. So
you just keep reaching for that brass ring there, bud.
I guess I'm reaching for the butt ring. Kissing butt is all it is. So I don't know. How about you, though?
So, yeah, that's just been doing the same, you know, trying to plug away at the new job and just take things in stride, man. It's been kind of hard, you know, but luckily I got this to look forward to and a couple other things. So it's all about keeping your mind occupied and sort of trying to focus on the positive, accentuate the positive, as they say.
1,000%. Well, on that note, my brother, the real reason everyone checks in bi-weekly, week in, week out, and however you consume this, if you had a bunch banked and now you're just rolling through them all daily, hourly, the reason why people tune in, my brother, they need to know what you've been watching.
My man, I watched again for the umpteenth time the classic, the effervescent, the perennial favorite, The Princess Bride.
Oh man, how many times does this make on the podcast?
On the podcast, I think this might be the third or fourth time we've mentioned
it. I think it's been mentioned more than that, but it's probably the third time we've talked about it. But go ahead.
I mean, I don't know.
It's a perfect movie. What do you want to do?
Yeah, I was going to say, I really don't know how much more I can say about it. If you've never seen The Princess Bride, I try not to hype up a movie because, you know, not because I'm afraid it's going to fail, but because I'm afraid that I'm going to hype it up so much that it's going to fall woefully short of expectations. But honestly and truly, if you've never seen Princess Bride, go watch this movie and just tell me you don't have an absolute blast. You know, it's just, it's so much fun, and it's done in that very old school Hollywood, you know, like with sets and stuff like that, and sort of, you know, like everything's been made up and built and constructed to look exactly how they want it. And then some of the, you know, real life locations, like they, you know, they filmed in Iceland and Ireland and Spain and all these different places. Beautiful cast of characters, you know, Cary Elwes is charming as Wesley. And then you have Robin Wright Penn, who is just absolutely magnanimous as Buttercup. You've got, you know, Andre the Giant making his acting debut, which, you know, as a wrestling fan, I always love. I can quote Fezzik word for word in that movie.
He's funny in that movie, too.
He is.
Like, legit funny in it.
He's hysterical. And kind of to peel back the curtain a little bit, like, he made that movie at the very end of his career. And by the point he made that movie, he was so racked with pain. Like, his knees were out. His back was out. I mean, like, everything from his neck down to his ankles was just ruined. A, because of wrestling, but also because of just how big he had gotten. I mean, at that point, he was a legitimate 8 feet tall, something like that. And, you know, pushing, you know, 480, 500 pounds, something like that. So, yeah, just wore out. And the fact that he was able to move and do the things he did and bring such charm and humor, and you never see it on his face, you know, it's like, it was just, it's really fun to see, you know. He did a really good job. I think he went above and beyond.
Where would you rank his performance in terms of wrestling acting? Because I think I know who the best wrestler actor is.
Oh, really?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's pretty high up there. It's pretty hard to beat Roddy Piper in They Live.
Oh, you meant a single performance. Okay. All right, now I'll say, but where does he rank, Andre the Giant rank in?
Probably solid two, maybe really? Sliding into third, maybe only beat out by Jesse Ventura in Predator.
Just by sheer bulk alone.
I mean, you know, he does have some pretty quotable lines. I can't repeat them here, but...
Yeah. No, I was going to say, I'm really going back and forth. I think Dave Bautista might be the best...
Ooh,
actor wrestler. It's him or John Cena. John Cena's climbing up real quick, and it's fun to watch because I would have not said that when he did the Marine and stuff like that. You know, his real early stuff.
Yeah, I think he really found his footing when they started turning him into more comedic roles. I think he above all, I think he has a really good comedic sense of timing.
I would agree with that 100%. So I think he's a pretty good actor, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say Dave Bautista's up there, too. But anyways, I was just curious where he would rank Andre the Giant's performance in there. But you think two, just under Roddy Piper and They Live.
Yep.
Interesting.
Well, and Hell Comes to Frogtown.
But okay, never seen that one.
But I haven't either, but I hear it's great.
And Roddy Piper's in that one?
Yes.
All right, we'll check that one out. Get back to you.
Marcus, do you want to see Mutant Frogs?
Of course I do.
Do you want to see Roddy Piper kiss a mutant frog?
Of course I do.
Have I got a movie for you?
All right, well, let's settle down and do this one. We'll be right back. I'm sorry. Well, cool. No, Princess Bride, again, I don't really know what I can say about it. We've dubbed it a perfect movie, and there's no part of that movie that unravels. Maybe the Billy Crystal part, he's a little bit eh, but...
Really?
I don't think he's that funny in it, but...
Okay.
This is my opinion. I don't, like, rub up against it. It doesn't, like, bother me. It's just like, eh. I think
why, just because he's doing, like, a schmeckety-schmeckety impression kind of thing?
A little bit. It just seems a little tired. Maybe by the time I saw it, it was just kind of like, oh, okay. I don't know. Him winking at the camera, literally, sometimes is like, ah, you kind of took me out of it on that one.
Okay.
He tried to phone in a Mel Brooks, and it's like, different feel.
Okay.
You know?
Phone in a Mel Brooks. Okay.
Yeah. So, in a Rob Reiner movie, it missed the mark a little bit. But, again, I don't bump up against it that much. So, that's me, like, having to find something bad about
sure,
it.
Sure.
So, that's my thoughts. So, Princess Bride, still 10 out of 10, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Would you give it 10? X on the Roman numerals?
Oh, speaking of which.
Yeah?
Saw the horror film X recently.
Okay. This is the Mia Goth, and it's a new horror trilogy now that's about to be, right?
Yeah. I think the first one was X, and then came Pearl, which is a prequel, and now they're doing the follow-up to X, which is called, I think, Maxine?
It's called XXX, and they're bringing back Vin Diesel, in fact. The third X, State of the Horror Union.
Oh my god, that would be so great if they made it full circle to a movie from 2004.
Yeah,
we dope. It just ties into the same world.
Yeah, anyways. Yeah, how do you like, because I know those movies are like cult classics now. People love the X and Pearl and Mia Goth in them. And
I gotta say, I actually really, really like this one. It's a little schlocky, but it's intentionally so, and it never goes too overboard with it. It's not like it's trying to reach for B-movie status, you know? It definitely walks the fine line of knowing exactly what it is and also trying to be more, you know? Like, it pushes the limits where it needs to.
So X is ultimately like a porno slasher?
Pretty much. So,
like, break it down for me.
So basically, this small-time porno crew decide that they're going to go rent out this spare farmhouse and shoot their latest, you know, I guess they were making the transition from film into either beta or VHS or something like that. And so their plan was they're going to shoot this really, really cheap porno movie and then distribute it on VHS and be the first ones to ever do it and make a million.
Fair business plan.
So as they arrive at the farmhouse, things start to go awry. The farmer's really not trusting. He lays down some ground rules, you know, like, can't go up to the farmhouse. You can only stay in the guest house. Don't bother my wife. She don't like to be bothered. Can't go down that road.
Don't go down that road now.
So, of course, you know, he's the harbinger of doom or whatever.
Right.
And then, as happens, you know, old lady starts going crazy. She sees what's happening in her guest house, and she gets all sex crazed and mutant strong and goes on a rampage. It's pretty dope.
Wait, who goes mutant strong?
The old lady.
Oh, damn. I thought it was Mia Goth that...
I mean, she gets some licks in, I'm not going to lie. Spoiler, she's the final girl, so she has to do some pretty, you know, dastardly things, but...
Okay, I thought she was the killer in that movie.
Well, she is, and in terms of she plays both Maxine, the heroine, and the old lady, Pearl.
Oh, okay.
So, she has a dual role in that, and gotta say, like, even though it's cheap makeup, and you can definitely tell, like when she's in actual light, it's very easy to tell, like, oh, that's the same actress just put in like really bad old lady makeup. But for the most part, they do a good job of like hiding her face in shadows and using like really intense blue lighting to like simulate for dark of night kind of thing. So, you know, not saying that they do a great job of hiding it, but it's
serviceable.
Yeah, a serviceable job for sure.
Cool.
So anyway, it's just a really good throwback to like classic slasher movies. You know, just
lots of nudity from the 70s kind of stuff.
I mean, there's a fair amount of boobage, you know.
Do they hang equal dong to the amount of boobage?
I don't remember, actually. That's a good question.
Michael,
Michael. Probably not, because I usually tend to remember hanging dong in movies.
I know, it's because it's not the norm, and we're trying to normalize it right here at What You've Been Watching.
Free the penis. Yeah. Free the penis. Free the penis.
Speaking of which, John Hamm came up in a movie, or it was a commercial or something like that. Uh-huh. It was a commercial for Good Omens 2. And Andrew was like, oh, that's your boy. And I was like, yeah, it is my boy, John Hamm. I said, but Michael and I do have a relatively healthy, maybe unhealthy, unhealthy obsession, healthy respect for John Hamm's penis. We got to see that thing as Corsair. And Michael and I got a big plan. We'll lay out one day, but we're afraid people are going to steal our stuff. John Hamm is Corsair in the Starjammers. Marvel, call us. But anyways.
Do you want to see a tertiary character work in the nude for 90% of the movie? Call us. We got a script.
Yeah, we got it. We got this one handled. Don't worry. Anyways, so yeah, no, I heard it. I've heard nothing but good things about X. Again, it's enough to, I know it made its money back and then some.
Oh, yeah,
enough to
yeah.
spring an entire franchise.
Yeah, I mean, they made it for a ham sandwich and a handshake, so.
Good for them. Good for them. And Kid Cudi in that movie, Scott Mescudi?
Oh, yeah, actually, he is. Yeah. He is. And to be fair, I didn't realize, like, that it was him. He did a really good job of playing that character, you know.
Yeah, I like when he pops. I mean, I was a fan of his first album or two, and then I hit or miss songs here or there, but he was always kind of hit or miss with me. But I just like when somebody takes acting with, you know, some reverence or whatever mm-hmm. and actually does the work. I mentioned the little stunt he did in Silent Night, or like when the RZA will show up in something. He was in that movie Nobody with Bob Odenkirk.
Okay, okay.
And he was just like, hey, it's the RZA. It's kind of... People I like pop up somewhere. I'm always a big fan. So.
See, that's my problem with the RZA every time he's in a movie. Like, I'm never like, who is that character? I'm always like, oh, it's the RZA.
I could, when he's introduced in the movie Nobody, he's talking to Bob Odenkirk via like a ham radio or whatever.
Okay.
And I could hear his voice immediately. I was like, oh, that's the RZA. His cadence is so, and the way he speaks is so like, bong bong. Like, I just knew it was him. I'm off, oh, that's the RZA. I didn't know he was in this movie. Cool. So, anyways.
Break a 1-9.
Yeah. So, yeah, cool. X, what do you rate it?
Oh, man. I am going to give it one pair of old lady boobies.
Nice.
Look like two fried eggs.
Nice. Nailed to a something.
Nailed to a plywood board.
There you go.
Nailed to a wrinkled bed sheet.
One of the more unique reviews we've ever given here at the What You've Been Watching podcast. Well, cool. Anything else? What else you been watching, my guy?
Let's see. After that, what did I see? I saw the new Cat Williams special, Woke Folk.
Oh, yeah. How was it? What he did another live... it was another Netflix live event, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Did you see it live or just the...
No. It was coming on at like midnight on a... Friday, and I'm right. usually working, so
I have shit to do today.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, like it'll be on tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, what'd you think about it?
You know, I gotta say, it really didn't hit for me. Saying it was bad. Like, I think he constructs a joke very well. I just don't think I was in on the joke this time. So he spends a lot of time. I guess he got into got a lot of press recently for saying something on the. I guess it was the Shannon Sharp podcast.
Club Shay Shay.
Yeah.
Just call the Shannon Sharp.
Please. But yeah, I guess he got into some trouble for saying some stuff about Hollywood elites and sort of not necessarily saying things that were true, but things that, like, just rumors or things that he claims he's seen, but can't really verify.
He was spilling a lot of tea.
Yeah.
He spilled a lot of tea.
So it was just more of that. A lot of, and I wasn't in on the beef, so I was kind of lost in the joke. I mean, everybody else seemed to be having a good time, but didn't really hit for me. It seems sort of like he was doing a little bit of Eddie Murphy and a little bit of George Carlin and wasn't really hitting the mark either way. Like, I could tell what his influences were. It fell short for me a little bit.
Yeah, Cat is, in my opinion, still one of the best working comedians today. Mm-hmm. And I just have a tremendous amount of respect for him. And he's his first special he did, The Pimp Chronicles, and then I went back and bought the DVD beforehand. I forget what it's called, but I think it's called Let a Play a Play.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the one with him in the white hat in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Those two specials I saw, especially when The Pimp Chronicles came out, like, you saying this shit is deaf? Yeah, that had me rolling. That's one of my favorite comedy specials of
Your
all time.
Your kid behind you just like, Daddy!
Daddy! Yeah.
Why do you eat all the cereal, Daddy?
Yeah, he was on fire on that one. And he danced in the middle of it and all that stuff, and had Lil Jon come out in the middle of a comedy show and just didn't even skip a beat, just on firing on all cylinders. So I have a lot of love for Cat, but I will say I saw World War III and I was a little bit, I felt kind of taken out of it. Like, I don't know if it was a production value or what, or I couldn't quite get into that one. He saw some really funny jokes, but I couldn't get into that one. But I know Woke Folk, my fear was it is just going to be this, like, war against the quote-unquote woke and cancel culture and all that stuff. And
no, and to be fair, he actually does a bit where he talks about, like, where he says basically to the effect of, like, people saying, you know, like, woke, like, it's a bad word or it's a sinful word. He's like, woke don't mean anything other, you know, it's the opposite of sleep. That's all that means. And so he kind of goes on a little bit of tirade about how, on both sides, people put too much emphasis on words and, like, they end up changing the meaning before you can even get accustomed to what the word, you know, like we have all these new terms and all these things, and then they get appropriated, misappropriated. And so then the whole meaning changes before you're even at the ground floor, you know?
That I do know. The one thing about the word woke, I definitely do know, and I'm not the one that coined this. So it's been brought to my attention several times, is it was just a terminology used by, let's be honest, a lot of black people to describe white people. Some white people, and the fact of, like, oh, they get it. They realize X about themselves and about the culture dynamic and the differences and things like that. And that it's a system that they just reap the benefits of. And you're like, oh, yeah. And once you see that, I'm paraphrasing grossly. Please write me in and correct me. So, but the larger point is, which I'm saying, is it was one thing, and then it got to be like these liberal, woke, blah, blah. And it's like, what? Or like the people that look at Marvel nowadays and like, oh, go woke, go broke, Disney. And, like, I hate to tell you all this. Go read a comic book. Marvel's been being inclusive and diversifying since their existence.
Especially in the 60s and 70s, like, where a lot of these characters get their origins from. Yeah, like, hate to tell you, Black Panther, always kind of a pro-black character.
Yeah.
Steve Rogers, not your type of patriot, probably.
Yeah. They've been doing that and including people for a long time. And that's why some people still have beef with characters like Iron Fist. That was them cashing in on, like, the whole kung fu craze of the 70s and stuff.
I'm not saying there weren't missteps.
Yeah, but, I mean, I still like Danny Rand, the character. It was the whole point of him is, like, he's not supposed to be the chosen one, but yet he is. And it kind of, he comes with some resentment because of that. And he kind of has that chip on his shoulder because of that. And it kind of works for the character in a larger sense. And he's like, I know, I'm the white dude that's from the corporate office, and just because my parents happened to die in a plane crash, I'm the chosen one. Like, I get the whole silver, you know, Lucky Rabbit's foot situation, so, I don't know. But it gets old, and I know, like, Jerry Seinfeld, I'm about to go off a rant.
Go ahead.
I know Jerry.
Oh, if only we had a platform for you to divulge your deepest thoughts. Oh, wait.
I do have a platform. And Jerry Seinfeld recently had said some things about, like, television is dead because you can't say anything and cancel culture has made it impossible to, like, land a joke. And Rob McElhenney, God bless him, just sent a meme of him, like, doing terrible things throughout Always Sunny in Philadelphia's career. Yeah, I don't think that's the case.
Hey, we wore blackface, bro. Like,
yeah.
On multiple occasions.
Yeah, and it wasn't just from his show. It was just from things in television. It's like, yeah, miss me with that.
The part
that gets me is that people will be like, oh, you can't say that. It's you'll get canceled. And it's complete bullshit. And I'm going to use somebody as an example. And I like this comedian. I have a tremendous amount of respect for this comedian. Just as a comedian and his craft. But, like, Louis C.K. said some terrible things on stage.
Just for a second there, I thought you were going to say Bill Cosby, and I'm really glad you didn't.
Yeah, well, you bring up Bill Cosby enough on the show. You got to throw him. He's your go-to joke along with that in Schindler's List. So, I just stay away from it to leave that fertile ground for you, buddy. That's what I do.
Here I shall plant my comedic flag.
There you go. Hey. But no, like Louis C.K. said some pretty outright crazy things. I remember on one of the specials before, you know, his incident happened, which I'll explain on that in a minute, but he was saying like raunchy thing after controversial thing, but he wasn't canceled for anything he said.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you can't say that, you'll get canceled.
Right.
He never got canceled for anything right. he said. It was because gross behavior came out, which he later defended himself later. Well, enough time passed. I don't know all the details, but that's what he got canceled for.
Sure.
All right.
Sure. It wasn't the comedic stylings. It was the behavior behind the doors, basically.
Yes. And like Dave Chappelle said some things that got him in hot water with the trans community. Here's the thing, though. Dave Chappelle, in that turn, took it as, you're not going to be able to tell me what I can and cannot say. So what did he do? Double down. Here's the issue, though. He's talented enough to not only double down, but triple down on the following things. And whether or not you like the subject material or not, he's a talented enough and skilled enough performer to walk that wire. And here's the thing, is the higher the risk for anything you say, you better have the technical prowess and the ability and the skill set to pull it off. Otherwise, you're just going to be looking like you're just saying lowbrow, common denominator, just gross bullshit. So the idea that people get all up, oh, you can't, it's absolute nonsense.
Right.
And the idea that also, I'm still on my rant, so I'm on all fire. Or the idea that if somebody, you say something and somebody doesn't like it and they sit around with, you know, and they go, hey, I really like this guy, but you really lost me when you said fill in the blank.
You're talking about like fans writing in on social media.
Or just to themselves or to others. Just even going, hey, I really like this guy, but I can't really rock with it when he says this. People have been doing that for as long as entertainers have been putting themselves out for.
Sure.
Hey, don't go see that movie. That movie sucks.
Right.
That's
right,
not
right.
them canceling you for like, it's nonsense and it's utter bullshit. And it's just the idea that people lean back on that for their own shitty ticket sales. It's like, that's not what this is. If you give the product that people want and you're good enough to pull it off, you can say whatever the F you want. One of the funniest movies of all time is Tropic Thunder.
Right.
It was made in 2008. Right. It wasn't like it was, oh my God, like the before four time. It was inappropriate.
It was
inappropriate when it came out.
Sure.
And Ben Stiller got a lot of shit for that. But guess what? He had the prowess to pull that movie off.
Sure. And I think that, and you and I have kind of talked about this a little bit, especially in the case of Tropic Thunder. It was intentionally supposed to be provocative. It was supposed to turn Hollywood on its ear and be like, hey, here's all the stupid shit that we do. And yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, we're going to make it funny. But isn't it really kind of fucked up? Like, it at no point were they celebrating the fact that, you know, Robert Downey Jr. was in blackface or something like that. You know, like, in fact, the one black character makes fun of him the entire movie for it. It's like, you know, you sound ridiculous, right? You know, you sound like an asshole.
He's like the dumbest motherfucker that ever lived.
That's right. Just like, so it's not like everybody was like, oh, and he's so great. And isn't this wonderful? Like, no, it's supposed to be. It was to drive home a point about certain practices, which again is kind of the point of comedy. Like, you're supposed to be provocative. Like, I'm not saying you can get up and say whatever the fuck you want, you know, like, you start going into a Nazi speech in the middle of your comedy routine, I'm probably gonna leave.
There's also people act like, oh, you can't say that, you'll get canceled. If you go to a job interview and you say ridiculous shit, then like, there's backlash for the things you say. And if your comedy stylings are that of, and there is some onus on the goer, if you're afraid of the comedian might say something that might offend you, don't go see the comedian.
Or do your research.
Or do
look
your
up
research.
On YouTube.
Look up, but if they say, like I said, hey, you lost, you really had me.
Right.
The beginning, I loved you, and then you said something, and I just couldn't rock with you again. I'm allowed to believe that and vocalize that. And also, you have a right to continue to say it, but I'm allowed to bitch about it to whoever I want.
Right.
Like, that's the game, people. So it doesn't mean, oh, you got, like, I'm so over it, this whole, like,
And on the flip side of that, I hate when people try to say like, oh, well, it's my First Amendment. It's my First Amendment. And like, well, or the reverse of that. Oh, they're taking away First Amendment rights. Like, First Amendment just means that like the government's not going to come arrest you. That doesn't mean that you're not free from consequence or free from public opinion, especially in today's day and age where we're all so interconnected and it's just so easy to hit like or dislike on something and immediately show, you know, it's Roman gladiators. It's thumbs up or down, immediacy.
Right.
You know? Like, so, like, yeah, it just, yes, you have the ability and the freedom to say whatever you want on stage. And the beautiful thing is, nobody's going to come haul you off stage, government-wise, is going to come haul you off stage and throw you in a gulag for saying these things. However, if you're saying ridiculous, wild shit and the audience starts booing, that's not you getting canceled. That's you put a shitty set together.
Yeah, or you're going for some lowest common denominator bullcrap. But the idea that people sit around the eight comedians that still say it are like, oh, we're all going to talk about what we can't say on stage anymore. Like, okay, have fun with that set. When I hear it eight more times about how the woke liberals won't let you say anything, cool. I'm sure it's going to be a phenomenal set, and I'll hear it six more times right. within your same tour that you go on. Like, great, man. And on the flip side of that, that doesn't mean also that, am I saying that people don't take it too far and call for people's heads?
Yeah.
It was absolutely times. Right. It's like, hey, we don't even know all the facts yet. And
right.
you're like,
right, right.
Or, you know, like Cat Williams was saying, or it becomes something that it was never supposed to be in the first place. Like, anybody that's celebrating, like, Johnny Depp won one for men everywhere.
It's like, not really.
He exposed something that needed to be exposed, and it's a tragedy that it took that level of, like, hey, but was Johnny Depp in an abusive relationship? Absolutely.
Probably a dual abusive relationship?
Right. Probably. Yeah. So, like, the greater good is that they both walked away relatively unscathed.
Yeah, they're going to continue to make movies and make millions, and it doesn't affect your life one iota.
Yeah, but like...
Everybody wins.
Yeah, everyone's like, Johnny Depp! Like, he won a court that it said, hey, you can't call me that without the evidence of sex.
Right.
It's... Yeah.
Again, you can't say wild shit without there being some sort of, like, repercussion.
Yeah.
You know, like, again, First Amendment. Like, hey, nobody's hauling Amber Heard away from, you know, for saying these things. But yet Johnny Depp has a right to be like, well, she's saying things that are blatantly untrue and it's affecting my business. And that's not right.
Yeah.
Which is why it was a civil case and not a criminal case.
Same thing with Jonathan Majors. It was like, everyone's like, oh, he got off on the tougher charges. I mean, right... And by all means, she seems like she's not the most stable a person. Given the phone calls he made, it didn't seem like it was the most stable a person or relationship either.
It was a little toxic, let's put it that way.
But yeah, it's and I'm getting off the topic here of like what you can't... But like, again, there's consequences for things. And people will jump on board and put all their eggs in one basket, and then it fails, and then they immediately turn and crucify this person. You're the one that invested the stock. Like, this person didn't let you down. You propped them up for you to be let down by them.
Right.
So it makes no sense, so... To have people taking it too far the other way, absolutely. But I'm just tired of hearing about, like, this, oh, you go woke, you can't, like, just miss me with that shit, man.
Yeah.
And if you're, quite frankly, also, if you are getting canceled, you're probably not funny, talented, or liked enough. Or maybe you did something that was just heinous, in which you deserve it.
Sure. But, again, there should be, the punishment should meet the crime, you know. Like, in the case, again, you mentioned Louis C.K. Should he have his whole career taken away? Probably not, you know, like, we shouldn't burn his DVDs and CDs in effigy, but did he need to take some time away and reflect and think about how, you know, his behavior might affect his career? Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. So, anyways, that was my whole rant. It's people, oh, you can't say it. It's like, most people aren't getting quote-unquote canceled for the things they say. It's raunchy behavior that then people start to reveal, like, oh, or it's just some... dumbass just being like, hey, you remember when you could say this word? And it's like, can't say that anymore because it wasn't really funny then, to be honest with you. It's called shock value.
Right.
We live in a society that shock, it's kind of worn off. So anyways, that's all I got. What about woke folk? I say all that. I love Cat Williams. I'm a big Cat Williams fan, but if this one might be a miss, he still has the Pimp Chronicles.
To me, it just seems a little bit like he's entering old man shouts at clouds, you know, kind of territory, which, okay, that's fine. And again, maybe it was just because he focused so much on the Hollywood politics and stuff like that, you know, and I just wasn't in on that particular beef, so it kind of went over my head. But it does have good parts. He uses a lot of multimedia, you know, like YouTube clips and stuff like that, and he'll just riff on them for like, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, whatever.
Nice.
So
it's becoming more and more common.
He does a pretty particular funny one about this blind kid who's playing tackle football. And I don't want to spoil it, but basically he talks about how, like, you could, you know, how would he know? You could just take him out in the field and blow a whistle and just have him run into things. Just be like, good job, buddy. Good job. You tackled him. Or, like, you know, he basically, like, the punchline of the joke is, like, can a blind kid play tackle football? Yes, absolutely. But should a blind kid play tackle football? No.
Yeah. Yeah, Cat Williams. Have you ever seen he called in, he was a guest on a radio spot, and it was, I forget who the woman's name was, but she came in there kind of, he was supposed to just be this like little puff piece, hey, I'm here to promote whatever, whatever.
Sure, sure, new special coming out, whatever, new
book. Yeah, and she kind of blindsided him and started trying to rip on him a little bit, and she...
Oh, about like his court dates and like history and stuff?
Yeah, he just...
I think I've seen
it. And he just turns around and eviscerates this poor woman for... And it is one of the... Like, that's when you realize, like, oh he's one of the best working comedians.
She tried to insult his hair and he was like, my hair is silky smooth. Come run your gnarled fingers through it. I was like, to think of the term gnarled, come run your gnarled fingers through it on the spot like that, that's comedic brilliance. Right. That's good timing.
He eviscerated that poor woman. She stepped in with a heavyweight fighter on that one, and she just got the business. It was like, all right, you can call the dogs off. And he just wasn't having it. It was like nothing to him, though. It was like watching a master of his craft, like at a roast, and just be like, who do you think? Hold up.
Right.
Yeah. Hold up. I got this. I'm not even ammoed up. This is just off the top of my head stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the dude is professionally funny and, you know, not afraid to call people on bullshit. So
you got the wrong one that day.
Come on.
Yeah, I feel bad for
that
woman.
If you go tug on Superman's cape, you know?
Yeah. So I feel bad for that woman, but I'm not going to lie, I was entertained by it all. So, but yeah, forever, a pimp named Slickback.
That's right. That's right.
You got to say the whole thing. So, anyways, what else you been watching, my guy?
Let's see. After that, I watched this documentary called The Wrestlers.
The Wrestlers.
Okay. It's an ongoing, like a serial documentary about this real kind of low rent wrestling league. They at one point were the developmental program for the WWE, but that's since gone away, and so they're sort of trying to rebuild themselves in that shadow. And so it's basically just about this wrestling league that's trying to get by and all the different personalities and conflicts that go therein.
I'm not going to lie. You know how I feel about documentaries, where if you can take any subject matter and make it captivating, I will rock with you for as many episodes as you got. Is it about just hope that you like the main players and let the cameras roll kind of thing?
Or? I mean, a little bit. The first episode is, of course, they introduce all the wrestlers and sort of, you know, get their story. And, you got the I was a troubled teen, and then at 18, I got into professional wrestling, went and saw a professional wrestling match, and that's all I wanted to do, and I've been on the straight and narrow ever since. And, like, you know, you get the dude who's turning 50 and never made it anywhere, and he's like, I'm the king of this little rinky-dink league, but what does that matter? I'm at the end of my career kind of thing. It's run by, the whole thing is run by this guy named Al Snow, who used to be in the WWE. He was kind of a B or C list wrestler, you know,
right.
But super talented, just never really got the push to sort of make it. His big gimmick was he was insane and he would talk to a mannequin head. And so,
I remember him.
Yeah. Okay. So like the mannequin head was basically his manager, and he would like run over the corner and get advice and pull it to his ear. And then like people would attack the head and he'd break down and throw a hissy fit. And
yeah, I remember him.
Yeah. Anyway, isn't wrestling fun, folks?
It is. Characters.
But then it kind of, in the following episodes, it sort of does a twist where it focuses more on like the financial side. And so like they're basically losing money every month. And so it's them trying to turn it around. And how do we take this little rinky-dink league and sort of expand and get it bigger and get more sponsors and, you know, that kind of thing. So it focuses a little bit more on the behind-the-scenes kind of thing, more than the action like in the ring, but still entertaining. You know, it's still captivating to watch, and you know, every episode you're like, man, I really hope they make that $400 for those parking permits.
What do you mean for the parking permits?
Like there's episodes where it's just like, you know, we got all the money for the ring, we got the sponsors, we got free hot dogs, you know, from Kroger's, whatever, but for parking permits, in order to have people park here, we got to pay $400 and we just don't have it. So we're doing a bake sale.
Nice. I gotcha.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. Or like, I'm going to sell these boots that I wore, you know, in Japan in 1991.
Wow. So it's just the ongoing traveling tales of this league?
Yeah, it's carnival bullshit. It's how do we go to the next town, you know?
Cool.
Get enough marks in seats and charging for a hot dog and a handshake, and then on to the next one.
Yeah, man. It sounds, you gotta love what you do in order for that to be the life.
Yeah.
You know? There's no way around it. You gotta love wrestling, and you gotta love the entertainment and joy of it. That's...
I've always found that the best wrestlers, and even to a small degree, like, you know, your local indie wrestlers, like, they don't do it as a part-time hobby. It's not like, maybe I'll pop down and do a show this weekend. It's like, you're there 4 or 5 days a week, working out, going to practice, signing up, making sure that you're available, getting your tapes out there, selling merchandise, you know, 8x10 glossies, you know, come get a photo with the champ, whatever. It's a hustle, dude, and it's nickel and diamond, but, like, you got to have a passion for that, you know? Like, especially working at that level where the difference between your family having the lights on or not is whether or not you make $200 at a wrestling show.
Yeah, that's tough, man. That's tough. And that goes for anybody. And I'm always going to call wrestlers athletes for sure. But any athletes, you got to love that, man. Like, if I was a coach, you know, for example, to bring it to a sport I do know, like football. And every football GM always says this. They're like, we're looking for, when you're recruiting or when you're drafting, you're like, we're looking for players that, God, family, and football, you know, we got to be tough, you got to be, okay, how do you find those people? Everybody says that shit, and it's like, I want the people that live and breathe this game, right, or this wrestling, or this art, this craft, whatever it may be.
I'm up at 5 o'clock in the morning, I run 2 miles, then I have breakfast, and I go do my one, you know, I go do my one a day, and then...
Right.
Then I'm off to work. And then as soon as I get off work, I'm hitting the gym or, you know, working on speed. I'm going to a dance class, working on my footwork, you know?
Yeah, something. You gotta love not just the act of doing it, but...
You know, the dedication it takes to perform at that level.
Yeah. That's what... I mean, I'm not a big fan of him, but Ray Lewis has a quote where he says, I play for free on Sundays. You pay me for the 6 days ahead of time, all the training and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm butchering the quote, but that's ultimately the point of it. It's like, I play the game, I play for free. I love that.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you pay me for the training and the time. Like, that's the job. And that's what I love, you know? Yeah. It's like, the game, I'll do that in my backyard tomorrow. You know, that's not a problem ever.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, but that's the difference between hobby and passion. You know, hobby is something like, if I get to it this weekend, cool. If not... Fine, I'll just veg out in the TV, you know, veg out and watch TV or something like that. Whereas, like, passion is like, I got to go do that. I got to go do that thing. Like, time is taken away. Got to go do that thing.
Yeah, no, I feel you on that. Well, that'd be interesting. What's it called?
The Wrestlers.
What is it on?
That's a good question. I want to say it's on Netflix.
Check it out.
But, yeah.
If not, whatever. Yeah. So.
Let's see. For The Wrestlers, I'm going to give it $40 on a hot dog sponsorship.
That's what's up. That's a good one. You know what I would give it, even though I've never said it?
What's that?
3 minutes. 3 minutes of pain.
Bonesaw is ready.
It is 3 minutes, right?
Yeah, three minutes.
That's what I thought. Okay. I didn't want to butcher it and be like, it was 4 minutes. Quote ruined. Anything else you've been watching?
Let's see. I've been watching. I just started. I haven't even completed it yet, but I just started HBO's Band of Brothers.
Oh, man. I've heard nothing. I won like every Emmy ever when it came out.
Yeah, it's produced by Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg, so you know it's good.
Yeah, I've heard it's incredible. It's like 6 different seasons though or something.
It's 8 different episodes, but they're all between, I want to say, like an hour and an hour and a half each. So essentially it's like a 9-hour movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like Roots, how it was like 6 episodes, yes. Each of them is like an hour long or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's really good. It's so well acted. I will say it gets a little overwhelming in terms of there's a lot of characters. Like, they follow the entire company, which is a lot of people, as opposed to following certain individuals in the company. And so at some point there is a little blending of like, wait, is that Epstein or Richards, or is that, I thought that dude names was Smith, but turns out it's Smitty. Like, I, you know, like,
they hit you with The Departed. Too many similar looking white guys running around.
A lot of similar looking white guys running around.
Happens.
You know, of course, there's exceptions. Like, you know, there's certain actors that you reckon, you know, they're snap famous. You're like, oh, he was in, that was the dude from, what's it? What's that thing?
Yeah, wasn't the guy from Heat in that movie? In Band of Brothers?
I think so. I mean, Ron Livingston's in it. He played one of the cops. Fuck, I can't think of the dude's name. Right. Yeah. See? Perfect example.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, just a lot of... I remember that movie was filled with cameos. That are, oh, he's in that too. Right. He's in that too. Oh yeah, he's in that too.
It's really captivating to watch. It kind of has a weird gear change in terms of the first one's a little slow because it's them going through boot camp and sort of learning the rigmarole and whatnot. And then episode two is literally them dropping in. They're paratroopers and they're dropping in on D-Day. And so it's just that whole episode is just machine guns, explosion, Nazis,
Man, yeah.
So it's pretty intense. And then the third one is like the day after, and they're sort of regrouping because they all got scattered to different areas in the drop zone. So they're trying to regroup and find each other. It's pretty intense. It's really well shot. It definitely takes you on an emotional roller coaster because as soon as you learn one dude's name, it's like, bam, sniper shot. There goes, what's his name?
Yeah, that sounds tough. Again, I've never seen it. Have you finished it yet? Or
no, I just started episode 4, and I think there's 8 or 10 episodes.
Okay,
so
all right, chipping away at it. Let me know when you finish it, because
I've
heard nothing but glowing things about it ever, and I know some people are like, it's the greatest miniseries of all time. Which,
I mean, it did win a bunch of like Emmys and Golden Globes and stuff like that. You know, not to put too many accolades on it, because ultimately that doesn't matter to me. Like, it's interesting to know that, and it might pique my interests, but ultimately you could win as many as it want. If I still think it sucks.
Yeah, or if it just doesn't. Yeah, if it's not for me, it's not for me. It's a lot of good stuff, and I'm like, eh. So,
right. I'm looking at you, friends.
Yeah, that's the other thing. about that woke stuff earlier.
Not my friends, like.
The show Friends. No, that was the other thing about those woke comments from earlier, is that Jerry Seinfeld was the one that said it, and it was like, you know, your buddy Larry David just did a 20-year run of a show that he said whatever the hell he wanted for a long time. And no offense, but your show is in syndication, which means that it's incredibly network-friendly. So, like, what are we talking about here?
Right.
What are we talking about? So, anyways.
The most white bread, mayonnaise-ridden comedian.
I think Jerry Seinfeld's overrated, personally.
Yeah.
I kind of do, but...
Yeah. Sorry, Dad. I know you're a big fan, but I always hated watching Seinfeld with you. I just did it to try and get closer to you.
I don't think he was the
failed.
Funniest person on the show. I don't think he was the funniest person on the show, though. Like, I was, you know, Elaine or Kramer or George.
Yeah. Jerry Seinfeld, lackeys was always the more entertaining.
And the characters that they introduced, you know. So, anyways, do you want to take a break then?
I think that's a good idea. Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsor, Local Shops. Do you love a place? Do you have fond memories of going to certain places in your local region? That place is dying. We'll be right back.
We are back from our sponsor, whatever local shops you cherish. If you had memories of a local brick and mortar store that you went to as a child, you need to go rifle through your wallet right now and see what dividends you have or shekels you can throw at this establishment. Drive down there and go spend some of your hard-earned money on it, because I guarantee they need it.
Do you have fond memories of your first kiss at the roller rink? Remember that time you got a Hummer in the back seat of a... or in the back row of the movie theater? Remember that old arcade bar that you grew up and spent hundreds of dollars worth of your weekly allowance? Yeah, they're dying.
Yeah,
go support them.
Yeah, go support them. They need it. Amazon is coming for all of us. So either
Amazon.
Yep, there you go. Which, support us, please. We'll say whatever you want about your company, Amazon. Please.
I will lick your boot heel.
Anyway, so thank you to our sponsors.
Local shops. Go support them now, today, before it's too late. And on a somber note,
yeah.
My guy, I forgot, almost forgot to ask you, what you been watching?
I thought we'd never get there. No, I appreciate that, man. I'm going to go a little bit rapid fire like I did last time.
Ooh.
So I saw a movie recently that I have not seen in a long time, but I've mentioned that it was in popular rentals mm-hmm. back in the day. A Knight's Tale.
Oh, with the Heath Ledger. Who directed that? That was
I don't know, actually. I don't know. I don't remember.
I feel like it was maybe written by Edgar Wright or something like that. Like, it was... somebody famous wrote that. We'll come back to it. Whatever.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
I don't know. I just wanted to say that.
News and speculation.
Yeah, news. The Wild News and Speculation podcast. That should be our subsection. Yeah. Wild News and Speculation. Anyways, so A Knight's Tale was what I saw, though.
Yeah, yeah. With Heath Ledger. Shannon Sossaman.
Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
Which my question, and here's my question to you. Is Alan Tudyk, like, geek royalty? I think he might be. And he also is a borderline. Like, what you been watching, Wall of Famer?
Ooh, he's knocking at the door. I don't know if he's in yet.
But I've never seen anything that I'm like,
it's like in Fight Club where he has to show up for like 3 days and we got to turn him away and hit him with a broom. And then on the third day, we're like, all right, come on in.
Yeah, but he's never been in anything that I haven't enjoyed him in. Like, he does a lot of voice work for stuff of shows that I like. He's in, Garth from Dodgeball the Pirate.
Oh, yeah.
Steve the
Pirate.
Steve the Pirate, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Steve the Pirate.
I want to say Garth, I don't know. Yeah, Steve the Pirate.
Not cool, Wayne.
Yeah. Yeah, he's done everything he does. And he does a lot of geek stuff. He was in Firefly, too, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. So he's got his sci-fi credit. He's got horror credit from... what was he in?
He's like the genre king, man.
Yeah, yeah. He's got that show on NBC where he plays an alien.
Yeah, Resident Alien.
He was King Candy in Wreck-It Ralph.
Yes.
Let's see. I think he's a strong contender. He might have geek credibility, especially, I think, just for Firefly alone. Oh, he was in the remake of... not Four Weddings and a Funeral. What was it called? Death at a Funeral.
Death at a Funeral, yeah.
The urban remake where he was the white boyfriend and he got accidentally dosed with, was it LSD or mescaline?
Something. Yeah.
And then he spent the whole rest of the movie freaking out.
Yeah, no, he was good in that.
Yeah, and he was hysterical.
He's also, he's done a lot of stuff, man.
Yeah.
So he might be geek royalty, but I like him. He's good in this movie too, though. And Paul Bettany steals the show.
The Val Kilmer Award?
I think it might be this week.
Okay.
I think it might be Paul Bettany. Even though, as funny as Alan Tudyk is, because he has such anger issues in that movie, he's always like, you, I'm going to ring until you... He can't speak, he gets so mad. He's like, there's pain. Ooh, there's pain.
With the teeth and the gnashing.
Yeah, he's funny. But Paul Bettany is naked a lot and loses a lot, but I gotta say...
Yeah. He literally plays Geoffrey Chaucer.
Yeah, he's the...
Like the famous playwright or scribesman or whatever he was back in the day.
He's a fraud. All of them are. Right. But,
well, I mean, he wrote Canterbury Tales.
Yeah, whatever. He's like, maybe you've heard of it. And they're like, we don't read.
This is medieval England.
Yeah.
We get burned for that sort of thing.
Yeah. But no, I say this in the best way. Like, that movie is corny as shit, man. Like, it's really corny. Like, they play modern songs during it, and they do...
Yeah, like, they're playing, like, the old medieval, like, long trumpets, and they're playing We Will Rock You and stuff
like that. Yeah, and they do the wave, and what's the Bachman-Turner overdrive? The, working so hard for the money. Wake up in the morning, people pushing, people shoving, going to 8:15 to the city. Yeah, working overtime.
I don't know if you can do more than that.
Yeah, anyway,
it's legally actionable.
Taking care of business is
a
song.
No, but then they do the ballroom dance to David Bowie's Golden Years. That's corny as fuck.
It's kind of corny, man. But it kind
of got the dude that's running through the stands at the joust, going like meat for sale, turkey, pork.
But it works though. I mean, even what's the main princess that he's trying to woo. I forget.
Shannon Sossaman.
Who was
90s prince or a 2000s princess.
Yeah, but she even has like hairstyles and stuff that were clearly not
popping at that time. She got the 2000s manic pixie girl haircut.
Yeah, it's like there's so much of it. It's like this should not work whatsoever. It's not Romeo and Juliet where they're taking it into a modern time. They're just like pandering to a modern audience, being like, we're going to put them like fashion choices that you would see here, and but they're going to be in medieval clothes.
Sure. And, yeah.
And like the whole Nike swoosh on the armor that the lady can
pull. I forgot about that.
It's so corny.
She's like,
dude,
I put my mock on it. He's like, I don't know if it's going to catch on.
Yeah, it's so corny, man. It's written to be so corny, but it somehow still kind of works.
It is. It's the right amount of like chintzy and like goofy, but it knows again, like it sort of knows exactly where it's at, so it doesn't try to fall too hard into it.
It's Queen in the sense of it's like arena rock. We're like, we're gonna play the hits and we don't really care, you know,
right?
What I mean,
yeah,
like
that's
not a shot at Queen rules, especially like I said, they write songs just for the arena for the people. So it's like, we're just gonna do this is almost pandering, but it kind of works in a weird way.
But also, like, they're the best at it, so you know, like, nobody works a crowd like Freddie Mercury, you know? Like,
yeah.
One of the greatest frontmen of all time. Like, of course he's going to thrive in arena rock, you know? Like, let me just get Wembley Stadium.
Boom, boom, clap.
Yeah,
he's the man. But this movie's kind of like that in the sense of they just look at you in the theater and they're like, we're just going to pander to you. But we're all about it, though. So it really shouldn't work. Like, they do the wave in it, and they do the, like, it shouldn't work. But also, Paul Bettany is one of the best hype men ever, especially when he's lying about his introductions to Heath Ledger's character.
So his role is basically, he's a degenerate gambler, and they find him on the side of the road, and they work him into his team.
He writes him night papers. He forges night papers for him.
Right, so that he can legally enter Joust, because I guess Heath Ledger... The point of the movie is Heath Ledger starts off as a squire of a knight who dies, and he basically takes over that knight's identity or something
pretty much
in order to better his station.
Something like that, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Whatever.
It's like Rudy, but like with jousting.
Pretty much. He's a peasant and he shouldn't be a knight, and he was given away by his father early on for a better life, and then his chance to... So he has knighthood in him, but he's just not a knight. So he forges these paperwork to really bring honor to his own name and this and that and the third and the... Yeah, and to get glory. And then eventually it's a fall-in-love-with-a-girl story, which... It's funny, though. She makes him lose. She's like, lose for me, and this will prove your love to me. And then he starts to lose, and like halfway through, she's like, yeah, she's tired of seeing you lose. Why don't you just win the rest of them? This will prove your love. I'm like, man, I'm over here getting poked with giant wooden fucking steak kebabs. That's not good enough for you.
Bitch, do you know how much this armor weighs?
Mm-hmm.
I could have been done. Yeah. I could have been over with it.
So, I don't know. I'll say this.
Bitches be changing.
She does change her mind real quick. Sends her a little flunky down there to go tell him, now if you love me. It's like, man, this better be the last hoop. I'm getting hit with death games. If I get knocked off this horse, it's over.
You better have that Guk 9000. I ain't doing this shit again.
Yeah, ever.
Real princess my ass.
Yeah, but they're both really...
I got a serving wench that's DTF right now.
The armor lady was pretty hot, man. The lady that forged the armor, yeah. Which they reverse psychology in here to be like, oh, they said that you were no good at doing armor. Did they say that because I'm a woman? No, they were just saying that you couldn't do it anyways. Well, I'll show you and I'll make your armor better. It's like...
For free.
Ha ha. Superior. This is why back in the Knight's Tales, they're like, superior male intellect. Her brain was naturally smaller, so I had to work with my knightly intellect. Like, fuck out of here, man. She's supposed to be strong and independent, and you dupe her with like the dumbest stuff ever. Oh, they said you couldn't do it. They must have been right. And they walk away, like, get out of here.
I heard that you wouldn't put $100 in my hand right now.
Right.
That's the rumor.
Yeah.
I'll show them. I'll put $150 in your hand right now.
So, I don't know. I just wanted to give a shout out to that movie, A Knight's Tale. And I'll say this, and I mean this as nice as I can, but if you know what I'm talking about, you'll know what I'm talking about. In A Knight's Tale,
mm-hmm.
I'll say this. Heath Ledger is one Brokeback Mountain movie away from being Chris Hemsworth in his career. There's not a lot in that movie, and I'm not saying he's bad in it. He's likable. He's very handsome, very charming. Right, but, like, there's nothing that's like, this guy's not a dime a dozen. You know what I mean? Like, there was, I didn't see the signs between that. And he's likable in 10 Things I Hate About You, but.
Right. He was hired for a pretty face and his.
Accent.
Capability.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, he's not too far away from being Chris Hemsworth.
And, like, well, he'll work.
Yeah. He'll move the needle in the ways that we want it to. So.
Yeah. But I mean.
And I like Chris Hemsworth. I'm not. But he's not going to win an Oscar in this life. I'd be surprised.
Not unless he does something really, really impressive. You know, he might have to have like a Joe Pesci turn where it's like, oh, this dude like actually has his chops.
Oh, well, you know? Furiosa is coming. You know what? I take that back. Heath Ledger was going to be Heath Ledger, and Chris Hemsworth will talk again after Furiosa comes out because you got that prosthetic nose and you might disappear in that role. So I doubt it, but we'll see.
We'll see.
But, again, and I like Chris Hemsworth, but I will give A Knight's Tale... 3 points for dehorsing another knight with a lance to the face.
Three flags.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know their scoring system. It doesn't make any sense. I know they play a montage of people getting hit off the horse so many times. You're like, and I don't even know.
Yeah.
He like points to the children, like he's of the people and stuff. He's like, yeah, you got me, poor people.
The people's champ.
Yeah, he was. So, anyways, that movie's corny as hell, but I kind of like it.
So basically, Heath Ledger becomes The Rock.
Kind of, yeah. He kind of does.
With a little bit of Romeo and Juliet, a little bit of Rudy thrown in there.
A little bit. That's a good way to describe it. Another corny as hell movie that I saw was The Fifth Element, which we've talked about a lot. But
really?
True confession, I don't think, I can't recall unless I was just really messed up, I don't think I've ever seen The Fifth Element beginning to end in one sitting. I don't remember seeing a scene that I hadn't seen before.
Okay. You might want to reiterate that because that was a lot of alliteration.
I know. when I was watching it from beginning to end.
Right.
Every moment I had witnessed before, mm-hmm. but I actually, now that I thought about it, I don't think I had seen the beginning of the movie. I had seen a lot of the middle and I had seen the very end, but I don't think I'd ever seen them in
all
one sitting.
Together,
right. Yeah, all linked together. And so I confirmed that by watching it and being like, everything I just saw I had seen before in my life.
But just never, not in this particular order.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that was nice. Check that box. appreciate you.
You were just like, I seen the scene, but then I hadn't seen what I seen.
Yeah,
I seen it, but then I remembered that I'd already seen it.
Yeah. So you got me. For those that speak, Marcus, you understood. You can just fill that bingo box in. But yeah, saw The Fifth Element, man.
What'd you think, man? Like having actually, like beginning to end, now you have like a cohesive story.
I get the hype on it, but I also kind of don't. I think if people like that movie as some grand space opera, then like I'm not with you on that one. I think Matthew explains it best when he says that movie is pure camp. And when you see that movie as pure camp, then you love it. And when I view it through that lens, it's pretty fun.
Sure.
But like, I'll be real, like the plot line isn't, it's pretty surface level. It's literally like the whole metaphor is there is a weapon of light and a weapon of darkness. And it's like, this one destroys, this one creates. You could actually take Gary Oldman out of that movie and the movie would still play the exact same. As long as there was some other benevolent force that was working for the evil that would send the pig people, then it like then it doesn't matter. Like he gets killed in the movie, like real, just like, oh, he plants a bomb and then goes back into the ship that he planted the bomb in. Like, doesn't make any sense.
Well, but he got, the whole point was that he was untrustworthy, and like that's the whole point of evil, is that like when you work for evil, who can you really trust? Because he died because he got double crossed because the pig people took the timer off and made it a manual detonation.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're jumping ahead.
No, like, you're good.
Go watch The Fifth Element if you haven't seen it.
But it's really silly, and like even they do weird sound effects when he when he's at his desk or whatever, and he starts to choke in front of the reverend or whatever.
Oh, when he's hitting the buttons
and it's like wait. It's like cartoon noises.
Yeah.
And like cards shoot out, and it's like what? Like you spent how much money on this?
By the way, that was a voiceover audition from What You've Been Watching, courtesy of Marvelous Mike Dudley and MD3. Call us.
I would love to do voiceover work. That would be a dream job.
Shit, yeah,
truly.
Dude.
That's a different conversation, though.
I want to be Batman.
Creepy Bowser Batman. Batman pizza guy. Anyway. But no, I dig it. There's certain, I know that a lot of people love The Fifth Element on some level. That, I mean, if a movie speaks to you, whatever, have at it. But to me, I enjoy it.
Sure.
But it's, I like the diva character. There's something about her, and I'm sure there's some deep dive I could watch on YouTube, but I had a person I hung out with a lot, and they kind of explained she loved The Fifth Element. She would always say that, like, the diva is like, she has this aura that attracts and it can see, and it's also kind of like this precognition. And I didn't get any of that from what I watched.
Sure.
So I just took her word for it, and I could kind of see it in a weird way. It was a lot of assumptions. Like, there's something more to her than just singing that's going on. Like, her presence is, like, influence. It's like almost
alluring.
Like a muse, almost. Like, it's inspirational, or she can, like, empathic in a weird way, too. So.
Right. Like, almost sort of hypnotic in the loosest of sense. Like, there's something that draws your attention, makes you want to be a part of that.
Yeah. So I kind of got that, and I could respect that, because that actress in the way it was shot really did kind of
portray that. Full makeup and had to sit down for like 6 hours to get all the prosthetics attached and all that, and then had to go like sing.
Underrated performance of the week, possibly up there with Alan Tudyk,
pretty high up there,
or Paul Bettany. We're not sure yet.
Ooh, it's a stiff competition.
Yeah, stiff competition. Now, I might give it to the diva. Actually, I think I am going to give it to the diva.
Okay,
so yeah, I can see that. I'm going to give it to the diva in Fifth Element.
I won't argue that. I think it's warranted. What did you think of it? Like the aesthetics, like visually, because to me, that's one of the most important aspects of a sci-fi movie is we all sort of have seen like futuristic movies before. And so it's really important to establish like your own vision of the future. And I think that they do a really good job in that. Like, I was just curious on your thoughts as far as like, what did you think of this semi-utopian, like, I hate to use dystopian because it's not that, but like semi-utopian future where like, everything's super regulated, but like also you have everything you need at the push of a button.
Yeah, I would say that part it was fine. That I didn't really. That's not what drew my attention to it. It was some of the fashion choices. Like Chris Tucker steals the show. I can't even give him an underrated performance because I don't think that he's underrated in that role. I think most people are like he's the Val Kilmer of that movie. Like he's certainly what to watch.
Well, you hire Chris Tucker to be Chris Tucker. Like, hey, the big over-the-top thing that you do, just do that all the time.
We're doing that with a little bit of, like, David Bowie in this weird space androgynite that everyone wants to sleep with.
Androgynite.
Yeah.
You want to sit down after that one?
I might. Hey.
You feel a little woozy?
Or you could just be proud of me. Jesus. Jesus.
I am proud.
No, I'm joking.
Good job. You get a gold star.
Now, you can't patronize your captain. All right? Anyways, but that's what he does, though. He's some David Bowie space androgynite that everyone wants to kind of sleep with that has some bold fashion choices and runs a radio show, which he's dope in it. So in terms of, to answer your question, though, it wasn't the world of, like, New York or whatever that he was in, of, like, the flying cars. That was cool, but it wasn't anything I hadn't really seen before.
Sure.
To be honest, it was mostly the idea of sometimes, like, weird stuff was weird stuff just to be weird. Like, the machine gun that the... I don't know what they're all the pig people bring in. I forget what they're called.
And whatever that alien species
is. The alien species. And they bring in this chain gun. And it looks like something that you would see in American Gladiators. Like it had like this weird shield. It looked like it was going to fire Nerf guns or tennis balls.
It did look like the tennis ball like cannon. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, that's a choice. And so there's weird choices in it in terms of like the arms dealer that Bruce Willis sees. He just has some giant like reflective...
Oh, the dude that tries to break into his house.
My bad. Yeah. He ends up stealing the guns from him.
So he shows up and he's got the big headband that just, it's got the image of like Bruce Willis's, Dallas Corbin.
Yeah, Dallas Corbin, yeah.
Or Corbin Dallas. Yeah. Corbin Dallas, yeah. So it's got the image of his hallway and he puts it right up to the eye hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's,
give me the cash, man!
It's weird stuff like that and like just the way that the spaceships were, That, again, it's not anything I've seen before. You know, like the spaceship that they flew over in looked very similar to like a NASA rocket.
Sure.
When they're on the barge, it looks like a cruise ship just in space.
Sure.
So some of it I get, but then some of like the fashion choices inside, like Gary Oldman is just taking wild swings, which is fun to watch.
Right.
But like somebody in the, when they pig people, which I'm just going to keep referring to them, that the pig alien people come and shoot up the opera or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
One person has like a sequin skull on his vest or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so there's some strange choices in the sense of, like, it wasn't the world that I was bought into, but there was also just weird shit just to be weird shit in terms of, like, the way that voices would echo sometimes, the buttons they would press and what they did. Like, on the plane, you just press something, they go to sleep. When the guy's trying to get on the plane and he starts to bang on the door, just a turrets drop down from the ceiling and they arrest him by making his put his palms on the
wall. Yeah,
it was a little plexiglass. Bit, yeah, the plexiglass, yeah. On the yellow dots or whatever, and the plexiglass. So that was the part that I liked more than it was just the actual, like, city of New York. It was just the little strange piece, like, of production management. Like, sure, they go downstairs to clear the ship for takeoff and they have to go burn all those little, like, bouncy boogery things off.
Yeah, like the not the trilobite, what are they called? The
Precinibites?
No.
Whatever they were.
Yeah, the little fuzzy, like, Mylock things.
Yeah, and they had to go burn them. And it's like, you could have done without that scene entirely, but they just wanted
to... added a little bit more to, like... So, like, it sounds like you appreciated, like, the little, like, slice of life, or, like, day-to-day, like, one more thing to get through kind of thing. Like
yeah.
Like, sort of the minutia of it all.
Right, because, I mean... Oh, I see a sliding door that goes vertical when somebody approaches it. Like, I've seen that in Star Trek. I've seen, you know what I mean? So there's some of it that is kind of, for lack of a better word, just kind of is what it is.
Sure.
And you just kind of take it for granted in futuristic stuff. But I don't know. It was some of the production design and set design stuff. That's what I appreciated more than anything. Because it was looked just shitty enough. We're like, what is the functionality of that?
Sure, sure.
But then it's like, all right, cool, whatever. It's in this world, so I can appreciate that for it. That's kind of what I wanted to, because we've talked about this movie on several other.
Yeah, I've always kind of likened it to, it's almost as if an anime came to life. It, like, in my opinion, I think that movie is about as close as you can get to, like, a live action anime, just in terms of story and production and, like, it. Like, if somebody put this into an anime form, I wouldn't blink an eye, because it would be like, yes, that fits exactly.
If they had a character who was motivated by food, it would fit 1,000% in it. You know what I mean? Somebody was, oh, I'm so hungry all the time. When can we eat? And then it would be an anime.
Like some, like, tertiary, like the taxi driver that he has to, like, we need to get from Empire State Building down to the Golden Gate or the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
I know just the path we gonna take. I don't know why he sounded like
Songs
of the South.
I don't know either. I know what you were trying to go for there, but Michael was trying to do a... Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move right ahead. So yeah, Fifth Element. I did dig it, though, and I'm glad I saw it. I think some people hold that movie a little too high. I'm not going to say that it's overrated, because to each their own, but...
Sure.
I do think some people, given they act like it's this space masterpiece, I think those people might overrate it.
Okay.
But I still enjoy the movie. So, I will give it, fire, Corbin, I got no fire. Yeah, he's so good in that, man. He's funny in everything, every scene he's in that movie. So, old Ruby Rose. The other thing I watched, just for something a little more topical, which... I did watch The Roast of Tom Brady.
I have not seen that, actually, so take me there, sir.
And take me there, son. We'll explain these references one day in a very soon upcoming mailbag, hopefully. But anyways, just to go back to what we were saying earlier, like, oh, you can't say things. Like, I just watched a roast where people said terrible things about other human beings. it was good. It's the first time I've ever seen one live.
Okay.
And it was... 3 hours and change.
Oh, Jesus.
And so it was a bit... I watched it in segments. I would wait for somebody to finish. And Kevin Hart did a pretty good job of keeping it moving as best he can.
Okay.
But it's hard not to get sidetracked when people are drinking. It's a live show.
Welcome to the What You Been Watching podcast.
Yeah, exactly. You have, and I'm not being mean, but you have athletes going up there with possible CTE trying to stay on track. And... am I saying anything? How dare you say something more than factually correct? I mean, they joke about it themselves a lot too, so hey. So it goes off the rails a little bit, and there's a lot of time that is just shared with audience reaction of them laughing and then being like, and then somebody reacting to what they said, and another comedian from the couch would be like, damn, whoever, and that gets you another couple minutes, and it all just adds up.
Sure.
So you're like, it actually, to me, it works better when it was edited down.
because you can eliminate all the chuffa, basically. All yeah. the, like, all right, too many audience reactions, like the line, you know, the line from the peanut gallery wasn't necessarily that important to the story we're trying to tell, or the, you know, the flow of the jokes.
Yeah, and it's really funny. I mean, it's some of the best comedians in the world, sure. some of the best former. They rip everybody apart, including, I don't know, you know who Aaron Hernandez is?
Oh, I'm familiar. Yeah, he
was a Gator, first off, so let me put that out there first. That Gator team that he was on had more arrests than anybody else in NCAA history, but they glossed that over because they had Tim Tebow at quarterback, and he was the Christ-like figure up front. Bullshit team. Give me a documentary about that. Anyways, he was a...
Christ and the convicts.
Yeah, seriously. But anyways, he was a tight end that played on the New England Patriots.
Uh-huh.
Got convicted of murder on multiple accounts, and ended up killing himself in jail. And boy, there was a lot of jokes about that. About, he said,
it should have been Tom Brady. Kind
no,
of thing.
They said one of the jokes that was really funny. He said Rob Gronkowski, who was another tight end that sure. Tom Brady had, going to go in the Hall of Fame, was like, "You are my favorite tight end you ever had. And we set the bar real low for you. Run, catch, don't murder."
So, that's actually kind of
clever. Yeah, it was pretty good jokes. It did, like I said, it just ran a little long. It kind of overstayed its welcome to me sure. by the end. And it was cool if you're not in the football world. There was some jokes that were there just for people that are kind of locked in with that world. For example, the head coach of the Patriots, who was responsible for six of their Super Bowl winning.
Bill Belichick, yeah.
He's known for post-game press conferences, for like, they'll ask him any question, and he just grumbles into the mic, and he's like, we're just preparing for Cincinnati. We're preparing for Cincinnati. For every question, we're preparing for Cincinnati. So just really kind of shitty to deal with.
Sure.
So to have him come out and actually crack jokes, and not only himself would be a part of it, is kind of good for his brand and image. And so there was a sure. lot of jokes that were certainly the teammates of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick were in on. Like, hey, go run the hill.
Sure.
Hey.
For a crowd of like six people. Yeah.
Yeah, which that's cool. It's whatever. But I did want to say there was one person in the comedians, Bert Kreischer and Tom Segura roasted as a pair.
Nice. Okay.
And it was, I don't know how well it worked. I like both of those guys.
Sure.
I've never seen people do it in a pair. And so it was kind of weird. But I think they did pretty well. They compared Tom Brady in his laser-like focus to that of a serial killer.
Okay.
Which is like Tom like plays perfectly into that. And sure. just being like, here's the checklist that they say for murderers. He's like, and he went through and checked off all that. Right. Bert just giggled in the background and chimed in with his jokes or whatever. But the person that you needed to watch who got a standing ovation at a live show was Nikki Glaser.
Really?
She destroyed, man. Like, if you're gonna just say, all right, I only want to watch a couple of this, her entire thing could make up the best of. She destroyed, man.
She is such a great comic, dude. Like, every time I've seen her work, she is just so bitingly acerbic and like so clever and so like cutting. Like, she never wastes a word. Like, yeah. every single word in her stand-up is meant to be there. Like, it's meant to build off the thing before it. It's almost like poetry.
I after watching that set, I really, it was, she killed from beginning to finish. The second she got up there, it was let's go, and she schooled everybody.
Sure.
The only other person that everyone was fine. There was people that were certainly better than others, but
sure.
you could tell, like, hey, we're gonna write a bunch of jokes for Gronkowski to say, we're gonna write a bunch of jokes for Randy Moss and the athletes right, to say. They did well enough.
Drew, like, they hire like Tony Hinchcliffe or
that was my other guy I was about to bring up.
Oh, really?
They brought him out, and dude, he was the other one that just brought the house down. He just mostly ripped on the other comedians. He ripped on Tom Brady, but then he just made his way down the lineup and just eviscerated each one of them. And
that's
awesome. He brought it. And even Kevin Hart, there's a joke I want to say, but I don't want to ruin it because it's a highlight of the show.
Okay.
But even Kevin Hart got up there because it was an insult on Sam Jay, who was a black lesbian. He made a joke about, oh, Netflix is checking the boxes with this one, whatever, whatever. And then he made another joke, and Kevin Hart, after Tony Hinchcliffe sat down, went up to the podium, to the dais, to kind of like, he's the host, that's what he's sure. supposed to do. He's like, damn, Sam Jay, I wanted to get him back as a black person. I really wanted to stand up for us on that one, but I got nothing. Comedy, respect, like, that was really good.
Good deal.
That was really good. Yeah. And so he kind of brought it too. So
not to plug another podcast, but Have you ever heard of his thing he does called Kill Tony?
I've never listened to a full episode, but I'm certainly... You can't be on the internet in the circles that we run and not have some familiarity with
right,
it. So,
right.
Long answer, yes. Yes, I'm
so
familiar.
So, for those not in the know, basically, it's he hosts this show called Kill Tony, Tony Hinchcliffe does, and he basically just draws names out of a bucket, and then each person gets 60 seconds uninterrupted to do stand-up comedy, and then they interview him afterwards. And 9 times out of 10, the interview is way more interesting than the whatever the comedian says. But it is also good because you might get a literal crazy homeless person who just goes up and starts spouting shit, or some dude who's just off his tits on mushrooms, just going up and spouting non sequitur and like, eh, snorks, remember snorks? Man, those were fun. And then every once in a while, you get some comedic genius where it's like, yeah, this is my third time ever doing stand-up. And he crushes. And just it's just amazing to watch. But 9 times out of 10, it's Tony Hinchcliffe interviewing the person afterwards and just ripping them to shreds. I mean, from what they wear, their back history, he asks them all sorts of questions. Like, so tell me about your divorce, because I know there's one there.
The assumptions. Yeah, no, it's... He does that, and he does it in top tier. Like, everyone had to kind of, comedian-wise, went over there and dapped him up afterwards, and even Kevin Hart was like, man, you podcasters, y'all are just bringing it. Like, so, no, it was good, though. It's certainly entertaining. It's a lot. It kind of merges the world of... and there hasn't been a roast in a while, and I think it's good for comedy when these things happen, especially when there's times where people are like, well, we can't say anything. Like, you can still say what I just watched it go on for 3 hours saying terrible things.
Horrible things.
Yeah. Like, and so it was funny. I prefer them edited down, though. There was a lot of like, okay, I see why they're not 3 hours when they air on Comedy Central.
Right.
You could cut this to a good two and we'd be just fine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was good, though.
What do you give it?
I will give it 3 Super Bowl rings earned and 3 Super Bowl rings that you cheated to get, or your defense bailed you out. And 1 you legitimately earned in Tampa. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's what I give it.
Do you remember the photos of him after he won the Super Bowl in Tampa when they literally had some dude like walking him through the crowd and he's just like, whee!
Yeah, that's fine goon work he was doing right there. He was on his proper Tampa Bay goonery.
He went through and was like, I love Tampa.
Yeah, of course he does. He's been in shit under Billy Belichick's shitty grumbling ass where he finally wins one and has some freedom.
We're all going to Venus Mons.
One of my favorite jokes he did, it's really early on in the podcast. He goes, you're a tribute to men everywhere. When Giselle said you need to pick between me or football, you left that bitch so you could go 8-9 and get bounced in the first round of the playoff, and you're a testament to men everywhere. Like, you gotta appreciate stuff. He just took it all in stride.
That's
like
funny.
He was a good sport about it, so.
Good deal.
But yeah, that's what I'll rate that one. And the last thing that I've been watching is one of my far better halves' favorite movies. And I always appreciate when somebody brings you something that is important to them so you can kind of share it with them and be mm-hmm. a part of their world.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I think we've talked about it before where someone's like, hey, this means a lot to me. And especially when you can watch it with no pressure and it's like, hey, I just like being... No, I feel like I know somebody more when they are willing to share. Like, this is my favorite blank.
Right. A little window into their soul in terms of, you know, the things that they feel and their thoughts and you know, perspective on life.
Absolutely. But I say all that to say I finally saw, and everyone knows the scene of somebody holding a boombox over their head, but I finally saw Cameron Crowe's Say Anything.
What'd you think, brother? Because that's a pretty seminal piece of work in terms of, you know, romantic comedy. I guess it's a romantic comedy.
It is. It definitely is. I actually really liked it. I think it still holds up by a lot of standards today. Prude kind of comes out of her shell. I like the idea that, what's her name? It's Ione Skye. She plays the character of Diane.
Yes.
And Diane was kind of like the valedictorian, had so many activities that nobody really knew her. And so John Cusack's character, Lloyd Dobler, I think it is.
Yes,
yeah.
It is Lloyd Dobler, yes.
Yeah. Kind of takes her out just for one night, just to kind of show her like the graduation party or whatever, and turns out he's like the most affable, loved dude in this whole little community they've built.
Yeah, he is the king of cool at their high school or whatever.
Just well respected or whatever. And
maybe so, not the coolest cat, but like he's the one that like can float between all the different groups, you know, like everybody's cool with Lloyd kind of
thing. That's a more way to, he's certainly not king of the mountain, but he's fine, his more than his slice of the pie, and sure. You know, he's kind of under the radar cool. So she gets taken out by him, and her dad is kind of strict and overbearing a little bit, right. But also a really likable guy. Their relationship is really sweet, in the fact that they're almost too honest with each other, to a point. More on that in a minute.
Sure.
But I liked it, though, man. John Cusack really kind of crushed it. And my issue with the movie, and this is what I wanted to talk to you about, is they almost write him like too likable. Like, in a weird way, he's so affable and like a little bit neurotic. He talks too much. He talks to himself a lot.
Sure.
He'll say things out loud that he meant to say to himself. He'd be like, oh, you're blowing it. You're blowing it. But right in front of the person right. That he's not supposed to say that to.
Yeah.
And so he's just enough kind of like, who is this dude? But also really written to be really caring. And John Cusack plays it off really well.
Sure.
And so I was thinking, like, is this the most likable fucking character ever in movies? And I started to think of a couple others. And just a sense of, like, it's hard to root against this guy. And the first one that came to my mind was Jack Black in The Holiday, where...
I could see that.
Despite the fact that, no disrespect, but, like, the idea of him ending up with Kate Winslet is far more believable just by the way that they wrote the character. He's so sweet and so kind and so funny and so attentive.
Sure.
And so, like, everything that you would want. Like, you're hard not to... Like, you find yourself rooting for this guy no matter what. And I'm just saying in terms of the way that the character was written. Whatever flaws you find in the plot of the movie is not what I'm talking about. But Jack Black was written that way.
See, I don't know. Here's my problem. Is that Jack Black in The Holiday is a charming motherfucker. Is he Kate Winslet charming? No.
But I think you're falling into the trap of... You're disagreeing with the plot. I'm saying the way the character is written.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm rooting for him. In reality, there's no fucking way.
Yeah, same thing here with, like I said, Lloyd Dobler. It's like everyone, he's almost too good of a dude.
Sure.
And he's like too in tune with it, and he hangs out with girls all the time. Like, it's almost unbelievable in the sense, but is written a certain way for a reason. And so I think this is like one of the king of those, like, he's just too damn likable.
He is kind of the writer's, like, wet dream in terms of, like, I'm going to write a character that no audience member is going to have a problem with.
Pretty much.
Like, he's just going to be the super stud that appeals to every, you know, demographic possible.
Yeah. He, like, likes rock and roll, but is also, like, a sweet guy, a little bit marches to the beat of his own drum.
Sure.
He's good with...
Just enough, like, neuroses to keep him, like, grounded.
He lives with his sister who's going through a hard time, but he's doing it. It's a mutual thing where he reaps the benefit, but he's also his nephew's best friend and is like
a
little bit of a loser in the sense of like, oh, I'm going to be a professional kickboxer, but it's hard to gauge my abilities in kickboxing because there's not really a sport in which you get into kickboxing yet. So maybe I just need to get beat up enough time that I can figure out if I'm good at kickboxing or not. And it's like, damn, this guy's likable. And so they write all these things. And like, that's what I was saying about Jack Black, too, in the movie The Holiday. It's like, he has all these little things going for him. That it's like, well, fucking, this is the only way that you would end up with Kate Winslet. By checking, you know what I mean? Like, you have to write him this way for this movie to have any plausibility. The sweetest, funniest dude on the planet who is so attentive.
Oh, I guess I'll fuck you. Yeah, okay.
And I was thinking, do you have any other ones? The only other one I could think of off the top of my head was Liam Neeson in Love Actually, where he's so invested in his son's relationship with this girl, a young Zoe Kravitz.
That's not bad.
Teaches him how to play the drums and all the other stuff.
That's not a bad one. Yeah. Just general like wholesome dad in terms of like, son, we're gonna get this girl.
Pretty good Neesons right there.
Thank you. I've been working on it.
Pretty good Neesons.
You've been tooken.
Straight took. But yeah, like has a deceased or deceased wife.
I think she's deceased, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so it's just like, of course you're rooting for this guy.
Right.
Lovable single father.
Single dad just wants his son to make good. Yeah, I dig that. Let me see. I think Ducky from, just off the top of my head, I think Ducky from 16 Candles.
Are you talking about the glue of 2 and a Half Men, John Cryer?
He did sit through all those cast changes, for sure.
He was the glue of that, man. And he got banked, too, so don't get it twisted. Yeah. Shout out to John Cryer. Shout out to him. I heard he actually is really good as Lex Luthor, but that's a different talk. But
we'll get on that.
Anyways, Ducky from 16 Candles. Why do you say that?
Just because he's always rooting for... I can't remember what the Molly Ringwald character's...
Molly Ringwald.
But yeah, he's always rooting for Molly Ringwald. Like, as far as I can tell, like, they never explicitly say that he wants to be with her. I think it's sort of implied, but he all... like. With that is he knows that he's not the right fit for her, and so he ultimately is just pushing for her, like, whatever her best interests are in terms of, like, yeah, you do need to go out with Jake, and that is the goal, you know? Like, you're going to get Jake to wish you a happy birthday. I think the guy's name Jake. Was it Jake?
I don't know. The male protagonist of 16 Candles.
The super hot one.
Yeah. The one that sits on the table at the end. Anyways, yeah, I can see that. He's written to be incredibly likable.
Like, he's the ultimate best friend, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah, he was friend-zoned, and he doesn't quite realize it, but you still are like, man, you know it's not going to work with you, but I still want you to... Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good pull.
Let me think.
Comedically, I know you had said... we had talked a little bit before that you had said Van Wilder.
I think Van Wilder, but my only problem with him is I think he's too edgy. Like, he's supposed to, he's written to always think that he's the coolest person in the room.
Yeah.
And I think the other characters we're talking about don't believe that about themselves.
Yeah, he's supposed to be king of the school.
Yeah.
And he plays it well. Like, sure, Ryan Reynolds plays a snarky dude really well.
Yeah, but I think it's a little bit too narcissistic, or a little bit too much ego in terms of he knows just how popular he is.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Let me think. The only other one that's coming to mind... Oh, this is a good example. Here we go. Ferris Bueller.
Oh, yeah. We can stop talking about it after that. Yeah,
I think Ferris Bueller is written to be the quintessential, like, underdog cool.
Yeah, that's the king of the mountain, right? Like, in terms of what we're talking about, of just written to be incredibly likable. I mean, a little bit pushy to his friend, but he has his friend's interest at heart, being like, dude, come have some fun every once in a while.
Right. You're not going to die today.
Yeah. We all have that friend that just needs you to be just a little bit outside of the box to break you out of yours.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think that's the correct answer.
And he's certainly always got, you know, something witty to say. Like, I think you talked about how he winks at the camera, but it's very intentional in this movie, and as much as he literally winks at the camera.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, again, he knows how cool he is, but he also understands that he's not the coolest, you know, he's not the king of the roost. He's not the coolest kid in school, but he's the one that all the other kids sort of know and like, oh yeah, I know Ferris.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ferris, that's a cool dude.
Yeah, exactly. And he's so likable that he's liked by the characters in the movie that interact with him in Chicago. He's liked by the people that are like in the school when it's like, say Ferris.
He's a righteous dude.
Yeah, he's a righteous dude. And he's also liked by you, the audience, which he openly acknowledges because he speaks to you. So yeah, that might be the correct answer there, my guy.
I think that might be that's the quintessential, like, underdog cool guy.
Yeah, super like, okay. Well, yeah, I guess all I got to do is rate it then. I will give Say Anything two renditions of In Your Eyes.
No rain in your eyes.
It's a good song. It's a good song. Well, cool. Write us in if we forgot any of these people that are super likable. Please, the female demographic is open as well. I'm sure we're glancing over So send it in at whatchabeenwatchinpodcast@gmail.com. You can slide into the old DMs on the old Instagram.
That's right.
There's more than one way to get a hold of us. Michael was, what were you doing the other weekend? Where were you?
Oh, I was running a donkey circus.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was pretty dope.
I was running a 5K away from the donkeys. You know what I mean? But it was it was something I was just doing. I didn't make the whole 5K, but I started to run. So
donkeys,
donkeys, yeah. On that note, write us in. Let us know who we forgot on this unqualified cool list, which is what we'll call it now. I like that. It was off the top.
There we go.
And on that note, anything else from you, my brother?
That's it, man. Just go support local stores. Yeah, for real. And support all the things in your community, because you never know how long they're going to be there. And when they're gone, you will miss them. So
for sure.
On that note, also go see a movie.
and talk about it with someone that you love.
Your eyes, I want to be the one.